Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So Krishna is going to speak for the first time in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam in chapter 7, text number 27. So just summary, so we can get started. The Atmarama verse has been spoken. Back to Sutta and the sages of Navisharanya. The sages are very eager to hear Krishna Katha, and they say, Sutta, whatever you speak, it's inducive, it's conducive to it, it brings about Krishna Katha. So please tell us some Krishna Katha. So he starts speaking about the Pandavas, and Prabhupada explains that's also Krishna Katha, because in relation to Krishna is Krishna Katha. The Pandavas are not separate from Krishna ever. Krishna is not separate from the Pandavas. So the scene opens with Duryodhan being smashed by Bhima's club, breaking his thighs, Ashwatthama becoming angered, Ashwatthama getting this really bright idea of committing murder, in the dead of night killing the five sleeping children of the Pandavas and bringing the heads to Duryodhana, and Duryodhan becoming disgusted. Krishna, Arjuna becoming angered, trying to pacify Draupadi, he takes a vow that he'll bring back the head of Ashwatthama so she can perform the funeral to her five sons standing on his head. And his chivalrous words being spoken, he dashes for his chariot, gets his weapons, heads off in hot pursuit of Ashwatthama. Krishna's with him, and he catches up to Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama's horses are becoming fatigued. Not knowing what else to do, he turns and releases his Brahmastra weapon. It's a detail, but it becomes important later. That part of his disqualification as a so-called Brahmana, beside the murderer, which Brahmanas don't do, he released the weapon without knowing how to retract the weapon. So it's an invincible weapon. And there's only two things that can stop an invincible weapon. That's Krishna. And another invincible weapon that can be withdrawn. So that's what Krishna recommends. If Arjuna turns to Krishna and speaks some very, very beautiful verses that describes position of Krishna as the only creator of fearlessness, and he does so by his spiritual potency, Vyudhasya, it throws away, it casts far away the influence of illusion, maya, mayam vyudhasya chitchakya. Krishna is able to do this because he's the source of everything, including illusion, and by Krishna's brilliance of his Satchit Ananda presence, ignorance is dismissed. So he then explains why Krishna appears in this world, and it's not for the protection of his devotees. I mean, it's for the protection of the devotees, but the deeper reason, yeah, besides those things, it's to reciprocate in a very personal way with those devotees who are exclusively fixed and rapt attention upon Krishna. He reciprocates with that mood of devotion. So he concludes this verse we didn't read, text 26. O Lord of Lords, how is it that this dangerous effulgence is spreading all around? Where does it come from? I do not understand it. So mostly we would like cut to the chase and forget the glorification of Krishna, just like, let's pick this problem. But Arjuna doesn't do that. In fact, consistently prayers in the Bhagavatam show expressions of recognition of some kind or another of Krishna's position, glorification of Krishna, followed by a very reasonable question. He's not even saying, please remove this effulgence. He's saying, what is it? It's implied. It's very unusual. And in normal circumstances, it would be frightening. Krishna's reply, text 27. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, know from me that this is the act of the son of Drona. He has thrown the hymns of nuclear energy, Brahmastra, and he does not know how to retract the glare. He has helplessly done this, being afraid of imminent death. In the purport, Prabhupada explains that this is just another sin upon another sin upon another sin, disqualifying Ashvatthama to be even considered a Brahmana, though Dvijabandhu. O Arjuna, only another Brahmastra can counteract this weapon, since you are expert in the military science. Subdue this weapon's glare with the power of your own weapon. So, it's not just that the one Brahmastra neutralized the other Brahmastra, but because Arjuna knew how to withdraw the Brahmastra, he released the Brahmastra and then withdrew the Brahmastra, and thereby he withdrew the other Brahmastra at the same time. Cool. Sutta Goswami said, hearing this from the Personality of Godhead, Arjuna touched water for purification, and after circumambulating Lord Sri Krishna, he cast his Brahmastra weapon to counteract the other one. When the rays of the two Brahmastras combined, a great circle of fire, like the disk of the sun, covered the outer space and the whole firmament of planets. So, atomic bomb meets atomic bomb. Immense, intense light and fire. All the population of the three worlds was scorched by the combined heat of the weapons. Everyone is reminded of the Sambartika fire, which takes place at the time of annihilation. Thus, seeing the disturbance of the general populace and the imminent destruction of the planets, Arjuna at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons, as Lord Krishna desired. And emphasis goes in the purport to, as Krishna desires, so things happen. the ordinary laws of nature are under Krishna's direction, and the extraordinary events in nature are under Krishna's direction. So, like we're discussing about the mystic cities, mystic cities are only possible by Krishna enabling them to become light, to become small, to become big, to be able to create something, to be able to remove something, to have desires that cannot be opposed just by wishing something to happen, it happens. It's supported by Krishna, and therefore it happens. Prabhupada writes, there are many agents to the all-powerful Lord, and by His will only can one execute what he desires. Then Sutta begins speaking about Arjuna's disposition and Krishna's disposition. Arjuna is characterized here as having eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper. He's in that mood. Krishna's eyes are described as lotus. They soothe and cool. He dexterously arrested the son of Gotami and bound him with ropes like an animal. Similarly, this is the same thing that happened with when Dronacharya had requested the Pandavas to go and defeat the armies of King Drupada. It's kind of like a sign of humiliation. They captured him and bound him in ropes. And saying when after Bali Maharaj had promised 3 steps of land, he could only get 2, Ramana had him bound up by ropes. They did the same thing to Hanuman. They captured him in the Ashoka garden, bound him with ropes. And here, same thing. So he's a Brahmana, but he's being treated like a criminal. He's a criminal. Sridhar Swami remarks in his commentary that the dharma or the duty of a kshatriya is to capture like an animal one who behaves like an animal, even though he is of high parentage. Described in the purport. So, Ashwatthama is now bound by ropes, and after binding Ashwatthama, Arjuna wanted to take him to the military camp. So back to the battlefield, back to the camp of the Pandavas. And Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, looking on with his lotus eyes, spoke to angry Arjuna. Krishna said, O Arjuna, you should not show mercy by releasing this relative of a Brahmana, Brahmabandhu, for he has killed innocent boys in their sleep. Prabhupada, in the purport, discusses Brahmabandhu, one of the repeated themes. He did it. My understanding or appreciation of why Prabhupada did like this is he was addressing still today. Prevalent idea is Brahmana by birth or Kshatriya by birth or something by birth. When if one has a certain birth but has disqualification, then they're not eligible to be called by that. Rather than saying, you know, so-called Brahmana, he goes through this with repetition. The son of a high court judge doesn't mean he's a high court judge. The son of a surgeon doesn't mean he's a surgeon. He may become a surgeon, but he has to undergo the training to become a surgeon. You have to have somebody represent you in court that doesn't know law. Someone to, you know, bring out a surgery knife and start cutting you up if they don't know what they're doing. They don't have the proper training, credential. So similarly, one is not to be considered a brahmana simply because he's born in a brahmana, so but he may be, but proper training has to be there. So he's, again, my sense is Prabhupada was addressing that pride in the Brahmin-born but unqualified persons. It's like one of the unpleasant parts of visiting Vrindavan is wherever you go, there's certain group of people there in your face with their hand in your chest saying, Vrijvasi Brahmin. Vrijvasi Brahmin. You should give to Vrijvasi Brahmin. And then there's 10 of them. And they're very bushy. Not Lord of goodness at all. They're not detached at all. They're extremely fruitive, extremely passionate, extremely rude. They invite altercations because of how rude they are. But, you know, they're Vrijvasis. It's part of Vrindavan in a number of places. In some places it's worse than others. So, Brahmana by qualification, not by birth. Krishna continued, person who knows the principles of religion does not kill an enemy who is careless, intoxicated, insane, asleep, afraid, or devoid of his chariot. Nor does he kill a boy, a woman, a foolish creature, or a surrendered soul. So this is religious instruction, and I'm going to read a little bit from Burijan's notes because he's written a very wonderful book. You have this book? This Approaching the Lord's Lotus Feet, or something like that. It's Cantos 1 through 4, where he's gone through the commentaries of the Acharyas and augmented Prabhupada's, you know, what's the flow of those first four cantos, augmented by the commentary of the Acharyas, and just like taking the essences of things and connecting the, you know, the successive flow of not just the storyline, but also the main ideas, what's the main points that Vyasadeva is presenting and our Acharyas are explaining. So he indicates that by text 35 it's really clear, kill him. In text 36 seems to, Krishna seeing the two sides of the situation. A person who knows the principles of religion does not kill an enemy who is careless, intoxicated, insane, asleep, afraid, or devoid of his chariot. Nor does he kill a boy, a woman, a foolish creature, or a surrendered soul. So, there's reasons to not kill. A cruel and wretched person who maintains his existence at the cost of others' lives deserves to be killed for his own well-being. Otherwise, he will go down by his own actions. So, this is an argument in favor of punish him because if you don't perform the duty of a kshatriya according to the codes of religion and punish him, and you just set him free, then his own misdeeds will bring him down. And he'll have to suffer more by that method. So, in the purport, here's the capital punishment rules in italics. Here are the persons who are to be issued capital punishment. He who gives permission, he who kills the animal, he who sells the slaughtered animal. Excuse me, this isn't capital punishment, this is the sin in animal killing. He who gives permission, he who kills the animal, he who sells the slaughtered animal, he who cooks the animal, he who administers distribution of the food, and at last, he who eats such cooked animal food are all murderers, and they are all liable to be punished by the laws of nature in italics. So there's the six. There's some devotees, initiated devotees, that are serving this, their jobs are airline stewardesses for Air India. On international flights, and from time to time they stop at this temple, that temple. I don't know how they do it. I know how they can read the Bhagavatam and become airline stewardesses. Or they have to serve this stuff.
You can have a nursing home and a trade that they have the meat.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, what do you do? Bring the trays in.
I have to bring the trays in. Okay, I refuse to bring any of the food to hospital serving any because of my religion.
You can't do that.
Well, there are some people in some religions doing things like that nowadays. You know, like there's some Muslim cab drivers that won't give anybody a ride that has drank on the airline or is not. Isn't there something like that, Jimmy? And if they have a dog or they don't want, you know, they're trying to, there's been some stuff in the news about that. You know.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's something I think about. That. You know,
I remember a girl in our New York, or a married woman in our congregation in New York who had a job like that. Well, there's one. So she worked something out with the staff, the supervisors, that she would do all the other things and someone else could do that one thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't like dispute or an argument, it was a discussion, and she worked it out. Then there's another. Presently, there's a girl, woman that has a job of caring for elderly, and she opts for the night shift because she has to administer medications and check in and so on, but doesn't have to bring in the stuff. And she has a similar, you know, if something arises, other members of the staff will take care of them. But it's tough, isn't it, when we're in?
Sometimes, you know. I'll say that, I mean, I a lot of times told the patient I'm a vegetarian. I had one guy whose big job was selling meat. He's selling meat. That's what he's made his life.
Job.
Well, I mean, he was a big distributor of meat. He said, well, what's this? He wanted to talk about meat all the time. What's this? And I had told him that I didn't eat meat earlier. And then he goes, what's this? And I said, you're the meat expert. I have no idea what that is. You know, I said, remember, I don't eat any meat. He was, you know.
Pushing it.
Well, I mean, I was just teasing him, kind of, you know, in a nice way, but sometimes I think at least maybe it makes them stop and think for a second, possibly.
Practically all nurses, if the patients are viable, and not just on tubes or something.
Two feedings, pretty much.
They're all getting meat products that have to be served to them. Sometimes have to be fed to them by your own hand, cut up so they can digest it. People who work in nursing homes, all this has to happen. So I kind of think of this, and of course the medicines themselves are derived from animals.
Yeah. Sure.
So many things. So I think of the verse where as smoke is, fire is covered by smoke.
Every endeavor is covered some fault.
I think of that. Because, and in my work, painting, I have to kill so many living entities accidentally, insects that I'm spraying and they just get covered over. You know, so many, I got wasps are all around people's house on the outside, big nests, I gotta get rid of them. It's, what can you do? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hopefully they'll hear something before.
See you guys later, Hare Krishna on your way out.
I try to remember and hopefully they'll hear it before I have to do my job. But it's, sometimes that's just the way it is, it's an imperfect situation.
Yeah, that's a good thing to remember. It's inadvertent. Oh, here's one statement that Prabhupada made. One should not even walk across the lawn. That's really bad expression. Because even when you walk across the lawn, or when you breathe or drink water, you know, when you exist, you're taking the lives of other beings. So when it's, but make sure it's in service to Krishna. And as far as possible, minimize. But it's not a license to just do anything. It's tough in the environment, the world environment, where there's no sense of these things. And well, the drama is being set up for Arjuna to have to make a choice where they haven't reached the camp yet. They're still talking. Krishna and Arjuna are talking. Krishna goes on, furthermore, I personally heard you promise Draupadi that you would bring forth the head of the killer of her sons. This man is an assassin and murderer of your own family members. Not only that, but he has dissatisfied his master. He is but the burnt remnants of his family. Kill him immediately. Doesn't sound very equivocal. It sounds very, very clear. And this nice purport about Krishna examining Arjuna. Sutta Goswami said, although Krishna, who was examining Arjuna in religion, encouraged Arjuna to kill the son of Dronacharya, Arjuna, the great soul, did not like the idea of killing him. Although Ashwatthama was a heinous murderer of Arjuna's family members. Purport. Arjuna was a great soul undoubtedly, which is proved here also. He is encouraged herein personally by the Lord to kill the son of Drona, but Arjuna considers that the son of his great teacher should be spared, for he happens to be the son of Dronacharya, even though he is an unworthy son, having done all sorts of heinous acts whimsically, for no one's benefit. When Lord Krishna encouraged Arjuna outwardly just to test Arjuna's sense of duty. Lord Sri Krishna encouraged Arjuna outwardly, it's like more than encouraged, he's emphatically, just to test Arjuna's sense of duty. It was not that Arjuna was incomplete in the sense of duty. Nor was Lord Krishna unaware of Arjuna's sense of duty. But Lord Sri Krishna puts to test many of his pure devotees just to magnify the sense of duty. The gopis were put to such test as well. Prahlad Maharaj was put to such a test. As pure devotees come out successful, all pure devotees come out successful in the respective tests by the Lord. As you remember that verse in Bhagavad Gita, I remember this section of the Bhagavatam quite often. When there are circumstances, especially from some administrative position, where some decision of what is fair and just is to be considered, where if you are lenient, then you're encouraging misbehavior. And if you're excessive, then it can drive persons away and be perceived by others as being protective of someone that's because they're your friend or something like that. Very, very difficult. At times it's very difficult. It's almost always very difficult. Very difficult. And it seems like it's a tempering that Krishna is making to build one's character. Not only, you know, to do the right thing, or even to do the right thing in the right way, but also to build one's character. One of the things that I have spoken about regularly is how important it is to become mature in Krishna consciousness, because there's Krishna consciousness that's immature, and then there's Krishna consciousness that's mature. It's hard to find Krishna consciousness that's mature. We need to become mature. And what's that? What are the symptoms of maturity? Because in a zealous, immature state, one wants to do what's right. It's good to want to do what's right. But to do what's right in such a way that the variety of persons who will be impacted by what's right means you have to do the thing that's right in the right way. Not only what's right. You don't take that additional pause of consideration. How is this going to impact people? Not in a political way, in a Krishna conscious way. Who's going to be injured by this right thing? Who will be protected? How to do it in such a way that persons are least injured and most protected, and their Krishna consciousness is nurtured? It'll be very challenging.
I'm not ending your position.
I could tell you some of the difficult situations.
It seems impossible.
Where and then even turning to different senior persons, what does this senior, that, you know, elevated saintly person feel about this circumstance, that circumstance, and you get, you know, different conceptions and perceptions. It's good to check in, but it doesn't necessarily make a clear path. So Krishna's intervention is really what's required. Sometimes it's not, you know, Krishna, what is it to mean? Hello. And part of it, as I see it, part of it is, as with Arjuna, he's building, at least in our case, he's building character. Where one undergoes those very serious contemplations, and some kind of little light, a little glimmer of light comes, and one has to follow that little glimmer of light and see where it goes. So, the principle is not only to do the right thing, because Krishna is making it very clear, you must be punished. But we're going to hear, coming up, Draupadi saying, spare him. And it's for Draupadi that Arjuna has taken this vow, although he's made a vow. Now she's saying, don't fulfill the vow. I release you from the vow. I want you to not perform, fulfill that vow. And his older brother, Yudhisthira, supports Draupadi, and Arjuna won't do anything without the word of Yudhisthira. And Nakula and Sahadev, who are considered very wise, also support Yudhisthira and Draupadi. And then with Bhima and Krishna saying, finish it. Don't hesitate, don't think that because he's the son of a Brahmana, that it's Brahmahatya, you're killing a Brahmana. He's not a Brahmana. Look at his behavior. That's the behavior of a Brahmana. Kill him. Kill him. Spare him. Kill him. Spare him. In his notes of this approaching the Lord's Lotus Feet, Bhurijan details the verses in which Krishna indicates both sides. Clearly he's indicated killing, but there's some where he seems to side with Draupadi. So it's a very, very, very difficult. It's, you know, either one or zero. You can't, like, some would half kill him. So, he did. Not only he cut his hair and humiliated him, but he removed this very precious jewel that was in this top knot. And Bhurijan's commentary, or quoting from our acharyas, he quotes where Ashwatthama, how much value Ashwatthama had in this jewel. He describes how wonderful it is, how important it is, how valuable it is, how he cannot be separated from this jewel. Arjuna separated from the jewel. I find profoundly important that Vyasadeva chooses this event as the first thing in his Krishna Katha that he speaks about. How one should execute duty very carefully. Even when we think, I know, here's, and Krishna said it. And Krishna gives like 6 reasons and Draupadi gives 6 reasons. Why to kill, why not to kill. So you could just take any one of those and justify the act. I got one. Here it is. And go. And he'll justify. And anybody asks you, here's the answer. But it's... like the yaksha that came out of the lake to ask Maharaj Yudhisthira some questions, and one of the questions was, the laws of duty, the laws of dharma are so complex. How is one to understand what is duty in complex situations? And Yudhisthira says, you're right, very difficult. And therefore you can't just go and cite this clause and that clause. One has to find out from the great acharyas, the Mahajans, what is to be done. And so there's so many, you know, Prabhupada saids and Prabhupada dids. And then it's, you know, there's other circumstances where Prabhupada did something else and said something else. So who's got that comprehensive picture of what Prabhupada would do in this situation? Who's got that pipeline? The challenge. But it's part of what maturing in Krishna consciousness demands. Nice to become mature, try to. Nice to become a devotee, or try to. Nice to become, or try to become a mature devotee. Arjuna was such a qualified person. Any discussions?
I have a comment that I'd like you to comment on. Which, when I think like this sometimes, that everything is an opportunity. Like those tests of building maturity and character and Krishna consciousness, there's always an opportunity there if we see it, if we're paying attention. But with that opportunity comes the responsibility.
Yes.
That if you may be messed up and you weren't as conscious as you should have, you have to take responsibility.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
It's like that, I don't know exactly which, St. Francis or something, was like, you act as if everything depends on you, but pray as if everything.
Right, there's different versions. The one I know is by Shakespeare, I think, but it's, work as though by work alone thine ends could gain, but pray as though all work were vain. Work as though by work alone thine ends could gain, but pray as though all work were vain. So in other words, we have to do our duty like any human. We have to try for something. We have to put forth the effort, but the result is always up to Krishna.
But the results are always up to Krishna, which is a little different than what Nitai was saying. You were saying, you got a responsibility. Within life, there's opportunity. And, you know, one way of dealing with opportunity is just close your eyes. And don't do anything. Because I don't want the responsibility. One of the discussions I had yesterday was on this. It's sometimes the right thing to do is to not do something immediately, but to allow Krishna to indicate. But some things you can't wait. You have to do one thing or another. Here comes the train, and you're on the middle of the track. Or, you know, something. You gotta do something. So what to do? And there's the opportunity, and don't make the right choice, then there's responsibility. And there's all varieties, you know, you make a choice that to the best of your ability and capacity and the assistance of others seems to be the right choice. And if it unfolds that it's not the right choice, then you have to retreat and take a different path. But sometimes you're well down the path before it appears to be there's any signal of any kind. Not that. So there's the trusting in Krishna that Krishna will guide, and also acting with integrity and sincerity so that if there is a mistake in the decision that's made, I mean, you know, from Krishna's point of view, not just the Vox Populi point of view, but from Krishna's point of view, there's a mistake. There's still some appreciation for the sincerity of the execution or the performer, on Krishna's account, at least. Challenging.
Especially with other people involved. Because sometimes the result is like a distrust and some stepping back and the dynamics of the relationship.
Yeah.
Resolving those requires more opportunity. It makes more requires the
more challenges.
Stepping up to the more opportunity, again with more possible.
But this point that you made about with opportunity comes responsibility. Prabhupada commented like that about the position of GBC. It's a very responsible post. And those who are my disciples who are carrying that, you know, they should be supported. But at the same time, if they make mistakes, they're very comfortable. It's so easy to make mistakes. But it requires feeling very dependent upon Krishna's benevolence to guide. And, you know, with your family and with the society and so on and so on. Vyasaki likes to repeat the statement, the safest place in the whole universe is in the kirtan of the holy name. That's something everyone can agree on. Chant the holy name. Chant the holy name. Chant the holy name. This festival of the Holy Name was such a nice experience.